Good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard. It's movie day once again here on Central Standard. We'll be chatting about some of the big movies that have opened up over the last month or so. And we'll also be giving you a sneak peek at the Kansas City Film Fest, which begins in earnest on Wednesday, April 9th. That'll be coming up in the second half of the show. But first, we're going to be talking about contemporary movies. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and I'm joined today on the panel by
Trey Hawk with ScenesDealers.com.
And Tom Pote, teach film studies at UMKC.
And in terms of full disclosure, we also must say that we have two professors on the show today. Trey Hawk, you're also a professor
at the Kansas City Art Institute.
And you teach?
I teach film production.
There you go. So we have some people on the floor here who know a lot more about the technical aspects than I do. But we're going to be talking about technical, artistic, and just plain good old popcorn-eating, movie-going stuff here today. And we're going to start out by talking about one of the really big and most controversial movies that is going to be opening up today in Kansas City theaters. It's Darren Aronofsky's take on the biblical story of the deluge. It's called Noah. And in this movie, Russell Crowe plays the prophet who finds out from God that he's going to destroy mankind. And this movie is not your Sunday school Noah. This is quite different. This is more esoteric. And if you're looking for a strict biblical interpretation, you may look elsewhere. This movie is more of a parable about environmentalism and a kind of a heady take on spiritualism rather than a straight-ahead interpretation of scriptures. And that is why a lot of people are going to be upset that the liberties have been taken. But you have to also realize that this is a movie based on a story that's only a couple of pages long in the scriptures. It's not something that can be done unless you flesh it out and bring some fictional elements into it, which is exactly what Aronofsky has done.
Well, I think that this one is, and I think the controversy kind of exists in me. It is controversial because multiple embellishments have been made to the biblical story. But one of the things that I think is very fascinating and actually could get at some of the troubles that each of us kind of have discussed a little bit is that those embellishments change the parable nature of the story and the philosophical exploration into epic spectacle. And that's one of the conflicts between the sort of philosophical exploration of everything from the environmental parable that you suggest, as well as a discussion of the nature of humanity, original sin, potential for good and evil, into these sort of epic spectacles with battles and CG creatures and things like that.
Right. I think there's one aspect of this film that's going to be a make or break with most audiences, and that is Aronofsky's depiction of the fallen angels. In this depiction of the story, the fallen angels aid Noah in his building of the ark, his protection from the hordes which want to overtake the ark. And if you don't buy into that, this is going to seem like one of the goofiest and most over-the-top biblical movies that you'll ever see. It turns it into a kind of a Lord of the Rings kind of fantasy rather than perhaps a biblical story. So if you don't believe in his take on these fallen angels, you will not buy into this movie.
Well, I agree with what you're saying. This is one odd, crazy movie. I think it's actually quite brilliant. It certainly is not the biblical story of Noah, literally, but what I really admire is that I think that it is a high-budget art film that does the unthinkable for Hollywood religious movies. It actually takes a biblical story seriously. It's Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal meets Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments.
There you go. I like that.
It's clearly been influenced by, I think, Kierkegaard's famous meditation on Abraham in his work Fear and Trembling, and it's dealing with many of those same sort of themes with Russell Crowe's the epitome of the Old Testament tragic hero. It is sometimes silly.
Yes.
I think just as you say, and I have real conflicted feelings about, in fact, those watchers or those fallen angels, which will remind one of Ray Harryhausen's animated figures from, say, The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. And here's where I'm going to have to think about this a long time. about to the degree that that is intentional, whether silly or profound, or perhaps, I think, probably both. I think it's where Aronofsky is acknowledging that this story is pure fantasy, just like fondly remembered myths with a profound truth-revealing meaning. Guess what? Just sort of like, in fact, the Old Testament stories themselves. Anyway, by the end of the film, Russell Crowe's Noah is caught between Kierkegaard and Samuel Beckett, an existential hero that's waiting for Godot. This is Samuel Beckett on steroids.
It is.
I'm going to give it the 4.5 stars. I'm enthusiastic about this film.
Out of 5 stars, what would you give it, Trey?
I think I'm right in the middle. I'm very conflicted. I would give this 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I liked it a little bit better than you did. I'm going to give it 4. So I think between the three of us, let's average it out to 3.5 or 4. What do you think? Should we say 4?
Let's give it a 4.
Let's give it a 4. 4 stars out of 5 for Noah. You know, I think that, we're talking about all the intellectual and esoteric elements of this movie, which are obviously are all there. But one thing I think is also important to remember, this is a ripping yarn. This is a movie that is really, it's fun. It's interesting to watch, even if doesn't matter if you take it as a literally or if you think of it as just being some kind of wild speculative story, it's still very entertaining.
Like the Old Testament.
That's exactly right.
You could very much compare this to the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I think so.
Just as fun and just as fantastical.
Yeah, I agree.
Which may be, in fact, some future generation's holy scripture.
So what do you think? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 to talk about Noah or any of the other films that we'll be chatting about. Is there something you've seen in the last month or so that you would like to chat about? You can also you can send us a note at Central Standard CST. You can send us a note via Facebook. Just send us a carrier pigeon note, whatever you want to do. Just get into contact with us and we will let you know, and we will be glad to hear what you have to say about all of the movies that are coming up. Once again, that number is 816-235-2888. Let's talk about another movie, a big blockbuster. It's an entertaining Hollywood epic. It's based on the young adult series, and it's called Divergent. Tom?
Yes, this is from the wildly popular young adult trilogy by Veronica Roth. And clearly it is designed to create another blockbuster trilogy, sort of as in Hunger Games popularity. It's no Hunger Games, to my way of thinking, certainly as a story. It has an obvious and rather ridiculous premise, but one that I can understand would resonate with young adults, particularly high school students. It's a dystopian future Chicago where the population, in fact, has been sort of forced to be divided and identified and make a choice as to what high school-like clique that they are going to belong to. So you're going to have, in fact, the smarties. You're going to have the humble, good community of folks. You're going to have the sort of punk jocks. And, in fact, in this story, our heroine ended up having to choose, but she is holding a secret, which is that her psychological testing means that she is what is called a divergent, someone, in fact, who really doesn't fit into any one sort of clique, but has parts of all of those things in her. So it's a dystopian action-adventure version of The Breakfast Club. Here's what I actually really enjoyed about the film. I find its message is pretty obvious. But, you know, I enjoyed it because I think that the chemistry between Shailene Woodley, who's going to become a really terrific actress, I think. She was so good in sort of The Descendants and The Spectacular Now. And she brings such a humanity and, in fact, a different quality, I think, than you get in The Hunger Games, that I find that really attractive. And she's joined by a newcomer named Theo James, and they, I think, make it all worthwhile. You know, while The Hunger Games sure has its beat in the storyline, I've always felt like that the romantic pairing in that sort of juggernaut of a trilogy has always kind of left me cold. But here, the romantic stuff is really pretty hot. And, in fact, Theo James... Watch this guy.
Okay.
He comes on screen, and he's really cute. So I enjoyed Divergent more than I should have.
Yeah, I completely agree with you that this is a movie that it's not quite in the same league as Hunger Games. It punches all the same emotional buttons, and it does appeal to the young adult audience. I do understand from those people who have read the books that the movie diverges, if you will, from it in many ways that the purists aren't going to like. However, just for what it is, you know, it's quite entertaining, and I think it's a decent beginning for the franchise, and indeed it will be a franchise. So, and I agree, Shailene Woodley is quite appealing. Kate Winslet is a kind of a mustache twirling villain, and of course she's always worth watching no matter what she does. So I'm going to give it three. How about you?
I'm going to give it three.
3 out of 5 stars, and that's for Divergent, rated PG-13. There's another movie that has opened up that is from Wes Anderson, who's one of the quirkiest filmmakers working today. And his comedy is a eye-popping visual spectacle and a goofy take on some ancient stories. And it's called The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Now, I have had a interesting sort of interaction with Wes Anderson's movies in the past. One of the things that I think is that some of his most emotionally effective movies were some of his earliest. And as he sort of developed as a visual director, he actually moved away from the emotional content that he gave to his characters. I think this really is the first film where he is under full control of his visual elements. The lush landscapes of the Grand Budapest Hotel are really amazing, and you could just really look at them and analyze them for days on end. But there are a couple of characters that are very central to this, the character of Zero, the character of Gustav H., that I found very emotionally engaging at the mm-hmm. same time. And I think this is him finally synthesizing these two sides of his brain, the one that wants the emotionally effective characters and the one that wants to just go crazy with his visuals.
Right. We do have a brief clip from the Grand Budapest Hotel, and we'd like to play that right now.
Who are you?
I'm Zero, sir. The new lobby boy.
Zero, you say?
Yes, sir.
Well, I've never heard of you, never laid eyes on you. Who hired you?
Mr. Mosher, sir.
Mr. Mosher?
Yes, Monsieur Gustave.
Am I to understand you've surreptitiously hired this young man in the position of a lobby boy?
He's been engaged for a trial period, pending your approval, of course.
Perhaps, yes. Thank you, Mr. Mosher.
You're most welcome, Monsieur Gustave.
You're now going to be officially interviewed.
Should I go and light the candle first, sir?
What? No. Experience.
Hotel Kinski, kitchen boy, 6 months. Hotel Berlitz, mop and broom boy, 3 months. Before that, I was a skillet scrubber.
Experience, zero.
Thank you again, Mr. Gustav.
Straighten that cap, Anatole. The pleasure's mine, Herr Schneider.
Mr. Asbusted.
These are not acceptable.
I fully agree.
Education.
I studied reading and spelling. I started my primary school. I almost finished.
Education, zero.
Now it's exploded.
Good morning, Cicero. Call the goddamn plumber.
This afternoon, Monsieur Gustav.
Will that fail, Frau Liebling?
What analysis?
Not now. Family?
Zero.
Six, you go.
And that was Ralph Fiennes as the persnickety concierge of the Grand Budapest Hotel, meeting his new lobby boy, and his name is Zero. And this is the main relationship that takes place during the film, and it's kind of a touching relationship, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the concierge. Even though it's a goofy, over-the-top world, there is a bit of a realistic element to this man taking this young boy under his wing. Tom?
I think a lot of folks are finding Ralph Fiennes' performance kind of surprising to them because
yeah.
they think of him as a very sort of serious actor, and here he's just having such a good time
right.
In a film that I think is just a cinema jewel. It's a lot of fun, but it does have, I think, it's already been mentioned, a lot of heart. This is not a quibble. It's just a point I would make. Of course, some of the fun of this is all the cameos of folks that have been, many of them longtime sort of Anderson collaborators, Bill Murray and Owen Wilson and Jason Schwartzman. And, in fact, Moonrise Kingdom's Edward Norton keeps popping up. And I don't know, it's kind of gimmicky.
It is.
But I think because this is such a fantasy fun film that I'm not going to quibble about that. Personally, I don't think it has sort of the kind of emotional resonance that Moonlight Kingdom did for me, which I think still remains just about my favorite Wes Anderson film. But, boy, it comes awfully close. This is just a great movie. And I tell you one thing which is really nice to see. It's doing incredible business.
Isn't that interesting?
So for what is such an indie kind of art film, somehow this has just grabbed people, and it's just selling out all over, certainly theaters in Kansas City.
You know, Wes Anderson's movies take place in a over-the-top alternate universe that you either buy into or you don't. Some people will find his work grading, and I completely understand that, while other people are allow themselves to be caught up if you allow yourself then to believe in this alternate universe that he has created and this really visually mesmerizing world, then you will really enjoy it. Others, beware.
It's totally magic realism.
That's exactly right. I think I will give it a 3.5. Who else?
I am probably going to go higher because I think this arguably, an argument can be made that this is his best work.
Okay.
So I'm going to go 4.5.
And Tom?
I'm going to go 4.
All right. So we evened it out at 4. That's four. That's a very high rating for Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel. And incidentally, it is rated R. Interestingly enough, you know, I would have thought that he would probably have tried to go for, you know, the general audience with this movie. But he has a few naughty elements that ratchet it up to an R. So there you are, Grand Budapest Hotel. I would like to just touch base quickly on a movie that opens today. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger's latest epic. It's called Sabotage, and the Governator returns with another action epic where he plays the head of a DEA task force, and what they do is they go around like a SWAT team to bust the local cartels. However, when $10 million in drug money goes missing, all of a sudden, Arnold's men are being picked off one by one. This is a movie from David Ayer, who is probably best known as the scriptwriter for Training Day, and also he did a film that came out a couple of years ago with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena, and it's called End of Watch, which has got a lot of respect for its realism, its gritty depiction of a couple of policemen. And Ayer tries to bring that gritty realism to this film, and for some reason, it comes off as completely and utterly artificial. This is one of the darkest, grittiest, and most violent films that I've seen in a long, long time. And Arnold, you know, has even admitted that this is the kind of the darkest movie that he's ever made. And it's eye-rolling in some respects. So I'm only going to be able to give it – I'll give it a 2 – only because some of the production aspects are good, and Ayer is an interesting filmmaker, but I think this is a complete misstep for him. So that's Sabotage, rated R, and boy, oh boy, does it earn that R rating. I wanted to quickly talk about another film, and I would like, Tom, if you would carry the ball on this one. It's a documentary about obsession. It's called Tim's Vermeer.
Yes, this is really a surprising documentary in that, in fact, it comes to us from the comedians Penn and Teller, who we wouldn't think of as doing serious documentary work. But it's really a fascinating exploration about a Texas very successful inventor. His name is Tim Jennison, who, in fact, becomes fascinated and we could say perhaps obsessed, in fact, with the art of Vermeer's paintings of the 17th century. And what it does is it, in fact, studies the intersection of 17th century art history and science. Just like movies today are at an intersection of art and technology. And this ends up following this sort of obsessed kind of inventor who sets out to recreate Vermeer's painting, The Music Lesson. And he's got these wild theories that, in fact, Vermeer, in the 17th century, was experimenting scientifically with the technology that would turn into the camera. And that's how he was able to paint with something which is like really kind of photo realism. because I teach film history and know that, in fact, during that period, in fact, with Da Vinci and the explorations of things like the camera obscura, that there's really something to that. This sounds like this is going to be terribly academic and not very interesting, but this Tim Jennison is such a lovable kind of character, and there's so much sort of heart to this film, and Teller is kind of accompanying him on his really travels around the world to learn more about Vermeer, that I think anyone that gets to see this film will come out being just really happy and pleased. It is only now showing on one screen. That's out of the Lee Woods, so you're going to have to search it out. But it's worth searching out. I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought this was a very interesting movie. And, you know, as documentaries go, when you talk about the subject matter, it sounds a little bit dry unless you're an art history major. However, I thought it was fascinating because it's a story about obsession. And this guy shares a lot in common with Vermeer. When you think about what Vermeer had to go through to capture those images back then, and then the struggles that Tim has when he tries to replicate that painting with all the modern technology he can bring to bear, and the money, because he is obviously a very wealthy man with a lot of time on his hands. It's very, very interesting as a character study as well. So I agree with you. I'll give it 3.5, but I'm going to go ahead and bump it up to 4 because I think that it is interesting, particularly if you do have an interest in art history. This is something that you probably want to see, and it's rated PG-13. What have you seen in the last month or so that's piqued your interest? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCURCST. We did have someone who contacted us about Noah saying, glad there was no use of captive animals. Interesting point. I think that most of the animals are created by CGI. So, I guess they did take that into consideration. It is a movie about environmental respect. It's about treating the animals as, in Aronofsky's depiction of the story, God is saving the animals, not necessarily saving the people. He said, the animals are the innocent ones. I'm going to get rid of all the bad things on the earth, which are the humans. And so I guess Aronofsky, in his attempt to be equally compassionate to the animals, has not let any of them come into harm's way. He's definitely using CGI in this respect.
You might not have known until this movie that Noah was a vegan.
Who knew?
Yeah.
And, okay, before we go on, I would like to quickly talk about the Muppet movie. And I know that you took care of that for us, Tom. But first, we're going to play a very brief clip. Here we go.
Excuse me, Jimmy, do you have a moment?
Kevin?
I just wanted to say that I accept your apology, and I'm ready to put our little disagreement or whatever it was behind us. And perhaps I was a little too eager about our wedding.
Big, I have a question. Am I wearing a sign that says, bother me?
What was that? What was that?
I was in the middle of evilly plotting. I do not like to be interrupted while evilly plotting.
If we're to get away with this, you've got to keep up appearances.
I am keeping up appearances.
If you want the crown jewel, stick to the plan. Do whatever the pig wants. Keep her happy. Whatever she asks of you. Stupid fraud. Stupid traitor. I don't want to talk to you, Kermit. I said I want you out.
I don't think you know what you want.
Yeah, dude, I just told you.
You're my lady, and I'm your man, baby.
All right, that's from The Muppets Most Wanted, and that's rated PG. Tom, tell us about it.
Well, hey, it's The Muppets, so you know I'm not going to dare give this a bad review. Oh, I don't want all the kind of hate. And I don't have to give it a bad review because I find this a totally entertaining addition to The Muppet legacy. Oh, and it's got great sort of voice work. Ricky Gervais and Tina Fey shows up as a gulag Russian guard and is having a great deal of fun. So I don't know too much to say. It's kind of heavy on plot about, in fact, Kermit being replaced by sort of his evil, not literally twin, but there's two frogs. One's an ace criminal, most dangerous, and so he's going to replace. I think the film could actually use a little less plot and a little more heart, as in some of the earlier Muppet movies. And frankly, it could use more memorable songs. But it's still a very happy, happy Muppet movie. I tell you what I really like. It's got a great opening number that is like what you get when Neil Patrick Harris or Hugh Jackman host the Tony Awards. And it is this song about how sequels are never as good as the original. And it's witty. The song is catchy. You know, the danger of starting off a movie with such a high point is that it's going to be very difficult to live up with just this pure exuberance of the opening number. But I really like The Muppets Most Wanted. I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
Okay, that's 3.5 for The Muppets Most Wanted, rated PG. If you've seen a movie you'd like to talk about, give us a call at 816-235-2888. And we'd love for you to join in on the conversation. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the Kansas City Film Fest, and we'll be talking about some of the other movies that have opened up over the last month or so when we come right back. And welcome back, Kansas City. It's Central Standard here on KCUR. If you've seen a movie that you've enjoyed over the last month or so, or if you want to warn us, don't even walk in front of the theater where so-and-so is playing. Let us know. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. Once again, that's 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCURCST. You can also send us a note on Facebook or Central Standard at KCUR.org. Once again, I'm joined by Trey Hawk and Tom Poe, my fellow film critics. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking with David Bernard, the chairman of the Kansas City Film Fest, about what's coming up on April 9th in the Kansas City area and all of the attractions that will be a part of the Film Fest. But before we do that, we want to finish up talking about a few other movies that have opened up over the last month or so. And one is a bizarre art house film from David Villanueva, who gave us an interesting movie last fall called Prisoners, and this movie is called Enemy.
This is a bizarre film. It is all about visual metaphor. The plot is convoluted and interesting, where Jake Gyllenhaal plays Adam Bell, this haggard history professor who is in a relatively loveless affair with Mary, I believe her name is, and he meets his double. He's watching films that were recommended to him, and he sees an actor who looks exactly like him. So he does a little research and finds out that this actor lives in the same town that he does. So he tracks him down and asks to meet him. And that's about as clear as this movie is.
That's right. Yeah, it's utterly bizarre. You're right. And you know what it succeeds at doing is creating a very creepy atmosphere. If your idea of a fun time at the movies is just go and get completely creeped out, this movie will do it. But the strength of this is the performance or performances of Jake Gyllenhaal. He completely made me believe that these were two different individuals that he was playing, the man and his doppelganger. And when they meet, you know, that's when all hell breaks loose. But there is a lot of magic realism and weird, bizarre things going on in this film that I think are probably unexplainable.
Yeah, it deals with visual metaphor, and there's not that sci-fi, you know, twist that explains what's been going on.
It's completely left up to the viewer, which some people will find frustrating and some people will find fascinating. So I think I'm split right down the middle on this one. I'm going to give it a 3.
I've thought a lot about this film since I saw it, and I think I'm going to give it 3.5. I'm going to give it just a touch of a nod because it is visually pretty amazing. There are really incredible visuals of the city, and the performance is just so good that I'm going to give it a little bit of a nudge. I'm going to go 3.5.
Understood, and that's Enemy rated R. So I'll go ahead and let's see, 3.5. Are we good with that between the two of us?
I'm okay with it.
Okay, 3.5 stars out of 5 for Enemy rated R. Let's also touch on another big screen epic that came out a couple of weeks back. And it's taken 7 years for Hollywood to give us a sequel to 300, the comic book over-the-top sword and sandal epic that was a big box office blockbuster. And it's taken them 7 years to get this new movie made, and you would have thought that in 7 years they could have come up with something that was a little more interesting than another just blood and guts bloodbath. And the visuals are interesting. You know, it's all computer generated, so it's, again, it's kind of this otherworldly atmosphere that's been created in this film. But at the same time, you know, it is just leaden. The actor that plays the lead, Sullivan Stapleton, is the name of this Australian actor, and he is as stiff as one of his iron spears. I mean, this guy's really weak in this film. However, Ava Green, kind of fun as the mustache-twirling villainess. She's the leader of the Persian forces who are coming in to take over Greece, and she's kind of fun to watch. But this movie is just laughably bad in so many, many ways. Visually good, otherwise, please. And I'm going to give it a 2.5. Tom?
Well, it's certainly laughably bad, but that pretty puts it in that category of movies that are going to be fun, in fact, to watch probably for years to come. This is just insane camp. The weird thing is that it's actually rather talky, though it has no reason to be, because clearly this film was just made to have graphic sort of violence and blood spurting out in 3D. However, when I say it's insane camp fun, it is because of Eva Green. To paraphrase Cher, she's a vamp, she's a tramp, she's a totally camp, she's a V-A-M-P, vamp. This is the straight male equivalent of 50 Shades of Grey. And I tell you, the way that she ends up being this dominatrix is just wildly fun. So I don't know. It's not very good. It's probably terrible. But boy, I just was laughing my way through. It's funnier, in fact, than most of the contemporary comedies I've been seeing lately. So maybe I'm going to go ahead and say, for pure guilty pleasure enjoyment, I'm going to say 3. I just had a great time.
Okay, 3 for Rise of an Empire, 300 Rise of an Empire, rated R. And boy, it does earn that R rating for that graphic violence. Let's talk about another animated film. This one's called Peabody and Sherman, based upon the old characters from the Rocky and Bullwinkle show from my childhood. And it seems a little weird to me that they would make a film about Peabody and Sherman, considering the fact that their audience is young children who don't know these characters and have no familiarity with them whatsoever. Maybe it's an idea of piquing the interest of their parents so that their or grandparents so that they will bring the kids to the theater to see something that they're a little bit interested in. But, you know, this is one of those kind of throwaway animated films. It's beautifully done, has a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor, and some nice voice work. So, I really can't complain about it. It's pretty well done. The only thing is it just didn't quite capture the tongue-in-cheek kind of satiric elements that really were the hallmark of those old Rocky and Bullwinkle shows. Cute, fun, and the kids will like it, so I'll give it 3. What about you, Tom?
Well, I had a surprisingly good time. Of course, I may, in fact, be closer to the audience of this film. In fact, it's going to appeal to you than it would to kids, because I learned more history on Rocky and Bullwinkle in the Mr. Peabody and Sherman parts of the show than I did from my very dull sort of junior high and high school history classes. It may have been a cockeyed history full of puns. And, Russ, I think you're absolutely right. This is not as, in fact, sort of sharp and bright as the old 1960s Rocky and Bullwinkle shows. However, you've got Mel Brooks being Albert Einstein, and Stephen Colbert, and, Stanley Tucci is Leonardo da Vinci in a really hilarious section of the film. If you don't know, Mr. Peabody is always sort of taking Sherman and his time travel machine to different parts of history, from ancient Egypt to Renaissance Italy. One of the things I really appreciated, though, is, you know, it really has a heartwarming message of tolerance and non-traditional family. And I really had a super good time, so I'm going to go ahead and give it 4 stars.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I really liked it.
We'll average it out to 3.5 for Peabody and Sherman, rated PG. Did have a few announcements quickly that I would like to make involving film in the Kansas City area. Of course, we're going to be talking about the Kansas City Film Fest with David Bernard here in just a few moments. But also happening around town, Panama Canal Gateway to the Century is a documentary that's going to be Wednesday, April 2nd at the Truman Library, or excuse me, at the Truman Forum at the Kansas City Public Library at 6 p.m. We'll have more information on that on our website, kcur.org. And also, the Tivoli will be presenting a Meet the Filmmakers special screening of Walking the Camino. That'll be Monday, March 31st at 4:30 p.m. and 7:15 p.m. Filmmaker Lydia B. Smith will be in attendance for Q&A sessions following the screenings. And also, the Performing Arts Series continues at the Tivoli with the Royal Opera House productions of Don Giovanni on the 29th and Marco Spada, which is a live broadcast from Moscow on March 30th. And then my old pal here, Tom Poe, will be talking about movies about making movies. The next film is The Five Obstructions. What is that film, Tom?
It is A Strange Experiment by Lars von Trier. So I say von Trier, and if you know strange directors, and in fact, he lays down a challenge to a filmmaker friend of his to take a short film that he had done several years earlier and take it to different countries where von Trier gives him an obstruction in the storyline that he has to conquer. And so we end up seeing how the very same sort of narrative end up gets changed out of its cultural context. It's a fascinating film, particularly for anyone interested in the art of screenwriting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and more information, again, will be on our website. And, Tom, you'll be leading the discussions on that film, will you not, at the screening?
One of our UMKC film professors will be.
Okay.
It may be me. It may be Professor Horseman.
Okay.
Come and
very
find
good.
Out.
All right. And Fine Arts Group will be presenting Europe and the Holocaust film series. It continues with Divided We Fall from the Czech Republic. That's April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Leewood Theater. Also, we have another film festival that's going to be coming out on the 16th through the 20th at the Alamo Draft House, and that's the Middle of the Map Film Festival. And there are all kinds of bizarre offerings there, and you can find out more on our website, kcur.org. By the way, we had someone call in and let us know that Tim's Vermeer is also showing at Liberty Hall in Lawrence. So there's another option for you. And someone called and said, on Noah, are New Testament stories more controversial than old?
Hmm. Yes.
And you say that why, Tom?
Oh, I think that, in fact, particularly for many Christians, there is a way where, in fact, when you're dealing with anything which deals with Jesus Christ, it just, in fact, puts more at stake than, in fact, these Old Testament stories, so that we have a long history of kind of playing loose with narratives about Old Testament stories as sort of adventure tales for children and such. So it's kind of understandable that there's more sensitivity.
We had Raphael who emailed us who said he saw the movie Adult World a few weeks ago and enjoyed it and would like to hear an opinion. Does anyone like to chime in on this one?
I saw Adult World a few weeks back, and I thought it was an interesting take. I feel like John Cusack, who is in that as a sort of writer-mentor figure, he seemed to be dealing with a role that he was largely phoning in. We've seen him in films like High Fidelity and other films. I would like to see a YouTube mashup of him as a writer in his films. But I thought that it was okay, but nothing stellar. It's a coming-of-age film where a creative writer in college decides that she's a poet and is pursuing that path, and it doesn't work out exactly the way she plans.
I see.
So, you know, nothing revelatory, but nothing offensive either.
Yeah.
I would probably come down right in the middle on it.
Okay, so you'd maybe give
three
it
out of five.
Three out of five for Adult World. Okay, thank you for that. And if you have a question for us, or if you want to chime in with your opinion, it's 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCURCST. One more film that I wanted to talk about really quickly. You know, the list of bad movies based on video games is a long one. You just think Mortal Kombat or Super Mario Brothers or Max Payne. Well, the latest in the fray is Need for Speed. It's adapted from the popular EA game, you know, and it's one of those mindless and overlong action flicks that, you know, plays like a demolition derby of beautiful international roadsters. Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad, who is a terrific actor. He leads his cast, and he's much too good for this material, and he tries to bring some authenticity to what's really an absurd story. But the heck with story. You know, does it have fast cars? Does it have great wrecks? Yes. It's kind of Fast and the Furious, but not quite as much fun as Fast and the Furious. But if you need something to hold you over until the next Fast and Furious movie comes along, then Need for Speed will probably fill the gap if you can just turn off your brain. And I'll give it 2.5. And the only reason I'm giving it that high a rating is because of the visual spectacle and the stunt work that's pretty impressive. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. And you can tweet us at KCURCST. And incidentally, we had a comment that it's always fun to see the introduction of now classic Wes Anderson actors, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, etc. I was sitting in the movie, and whenever they showed up, we cheered. of course, he does. He has this ensemble that he has created that is on all of his movies. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about the Kansas City Film Festival, and David Bernard has been kind enough to join us here. Welcome, David.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And you are the chairman of the Kansas City Film Festival. If you'd be kind enough to, if you would, just give us a little background on yourself.
Sure. I'm actually a trial lawyer. I'm an intellectual property attorney at Lathrop & Gage. I do nothing with filmmaking. I very much enjoy film watching, and that's how I got involved with the organization.
And what is the duty of the chairman in organizing the festival?
Really, the chairman is behind the scenes trying to make sure that the business of the organization moves forward. We have a lot of things that we have in terms of moving pieces, that we have the competition part of our film, where we had over 400 different films submitted this year, which was a record for us. And having a group that winnows those down to the very best, another group that goes out and curates great films that are popping up at festivals right now so that we can get them in front of Kansas City audiences before they have a chance to be seen nationally. And we're very proud of that.
And there's a lot of locally produced films that are going to be showcased here as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, it's my understanding that, movies that are made by the Independent Filmmakers Coalition, they would have showcases and stuff in the past, and this has kind of been incorporated into the Kansas City Film Festival, correct?
That's right. You talked about having a diversity of options. We try to focus on local filmmakers, national filmmakers, documentary, narratives, shorts, feature-length films, really to engage a lot of different portions of the community, including other not-for-profits, in terms of particular stories that are being told by filmmakers that year.
Now, there's also a filmmaker, an animator, who his name is Bill Plimpton, who's going to be at the festival this year. And if you don't know the name Bill Plimpton, you will definitely recognize his style. If when you see a Bill Plimpton cartoon appear on the screen, you know exactly what you're getting because it's very, very unique. What will Bill Plimpton be doing at the festival?
Bill Plimpton is going to be showcasing. He'll be there for Q&A, for one thing, which will be great. But his film, Cheatin', will be part of our animation showcase. We're going to have screenings at three different locations, and the animation is primarily going to be going on at the Alamo Drafthouse. But we will have his film. We're going to have a lot of other films there, too. Andrews McMeel is sponsoring a film called Stripped, which is all about the evolution of the comic strip industry and how it's transitioning into the digital age and all of the different headaches and opportunities that come with that. There'll be a lot of industry icons there to talk about the art of making comic strips and all of the transitions that they've had to go through. And that's one of the unique things about the film festival, too, is not just seeing the films, but getting to talk to some of the people who are involved with the making of the films and find out what inspired them.
Right. And so the filmmakers like Bill Plimpton will be on hand to do Q&As for all the screenings of their films?
I don't know if he'll be there for all of the screenings, but he will certainly be there for the showcase screenings on Friday and Saturday.
Okay, so how does one find out when the people are going to be there that they want to talk to?
That is an excellent question, and we've got some of the information up on the website right now, which is kcfilmfest.org. We will have the full schedule and tickets on sale here within just the next day or two. We had a few technical difficulties. We were hoping to have that up on Wednesday, but in any event, we do anticipate anticipate having that live here in just the next couple of days. I'm happy to talk about some of the showcase films, too, where we will have different filmmakers in attendance.
And one of them will be the documentary Rich Hill, correct?
Absolutely.
And what is that film about?
Rich Hill is a documentary about three boys growing up poor in the town of Rich Hill, Missouri. It just had a wonderful premiere at Sundance and won the grand jury prize there. And we're really excited to show this to a Kansas City audience before a national audience gets a chance to see that. We will have the director, Tracy Droz Tragos, will be there, and she will be answering questions.
I see. And the other documentaries, is there a documentary showcase as part of the festival?
We have different documentary categories. One of the other ones that's very interesting that will be there is called Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia. This was a documentary that last year Robert De Niro called it one of the two must-see films at Tribeca, and we'll have that on Friday night. We've got the executive producer, Chad Troutwine, will be there to talk about his work on that film, but also a lot of other films. He's been involved in a number of Cannes premiered films, Sundance premiered films over the years, and we'll be there to talk about his work.
And, of course, the festival would be taking place at the Alamo Drafthouse, and also is it the Cinemark on the Plaza?
Also at the Cinemark, and I think we're going to have a few screenings at Standee's down in Prairie Village, too.
Okay. And I wanted also to mention that we got a call from Paul, who said that Practical Fever at the Tivoli will be opening on April 4th. Practical theorist David Kaplan and MK12 Design Study did the graphics for the film. And anybody who's familiar with some of the recent James Bond films will know MK12 because of their brilliant graphic work that they did on some of those films and some other major Hollywood releases. And that's a local computer graphics outfit.
For somebody who is just getting their feet wet in the sort of festival circuit as a viewer, and they want to come to just one or two things to kind of get a feel for it, because we're always encouraging new cinema files. Do you have a couple of must-sees, some of your favorites that are going to come to the film festival that you would say that somebody's got to come to see this?
Well, I try not to put my own personal taste at issue, but something that I think will have a wide audience appeal is Ping Pong Summer. It just premiered at Sundance. It is a fun 80s retro comedy with Susan Sarandon and Leah Thompson and Amy Sedaris. It got sold almost immediately after it premiered at Sundance. And that if somebody just wants to dip their toe into the water and doesn't want to see something that's overly intellectual, want to enjoy some popcorn, enjoy a few laughs, that's a great film, Ping Pong Summer. Part of the richness of the festival experience that we will have with that, though, we'll be showing the short The Sidekick before that. The Sidekick is a comedy short about superhero sidekicks. It's got a lot of famous comedians. Ron Livingston from Office Space is in that, Jordan Peele. We'll have the writer, director, and star of that, Rob Benedict, who grew up in Columbia, will be coming out, and he'll be there for Q&A before the screening.
Now, isn't there also a documentary about a town in Missouri that'll be showcased?
That was Rich Hill that we were talking about.
That was the
yes.
one. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was the same one, if there was a different one that we needed to make sure that we addressed. How has the festival evolved over the years? I mean, this is the 18th annual festival. What's different now than how it was back in the day?
You know, it's interesting. The film festival evolved out of two separate festivals, one feature length and one shorts. And over the years, the two groups of people who are putting these on, who both had very successful festivals before that, combined. And it was great in terms of Kansas City having an opportunity to take advantage of the critical mass of all of those people working towards one larger film festival. One thing that we're doing over the last 2 years in particular is trying to reach out to different community organizations and find out, let them know about stories that are being told by filmmakers that are going to be interesting to them. There's a film we have this year called Alive Inside, which has had a great reception at festivals, which deals with Alzheimer's and breaking through to Alzheimer's patients using music. So we'll be doing a screening of that in collaboration with the Alzheimer's Association here in town, and we think that'll be pretty
yeah.
special.
And what are some of – there's animation as well, right?
Correct. Yes, we will have Stripped, which I had mentioned. One of the other things that'll be fun, if you want to talk about somebody who's just getting involved in the festival experience, we have a film this year, Ernest and Celestine, which was an Oscar-nominated film this year. It's a fun kids movie with animals. It's got the voices of Forrest Whitaker and William H. Macy. We'll be having a free screening of that, so check out our website. And we will also have a couple of normal screenings as well.
And are there shorts, animated shorts, as well as these feature-length films?
We have all of that.
All of that.
We have experimental. We have kids' movies. The first weekend of the festival is the Real Spirit portion, which is a children's competition film festival. We will have children-friendly shorts. We will have children very not-friendly shorts. A lot of grown-up fare, too.
Some of that Bill Plimpton stuff is not for the kiddies.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I don't think you want to bring your kids to any of that.
Okay. Now, if someone is a budding filmmaker and wants to learn about that, what can the festival offer them?
We're going to have a lot of panels and workshops that are there. For instance, one thing that is being put on through the Kansas City Volunteer Accountants and Attorneys for the Arts is there's going to be a legal seminar on Saturday where filmmakers who certainly know a lot already about the art of filmmaking can learn a little bit about the practical business aspects. But we'll have screenwriting workshops and other things as well.
Great. Thank you, David Bernard, for joining us. You've been listening to Central Standard, the movie show, and I want to thank my fellow critics, Trey Hawk and Tom Poe. And we want to make sure that everyone is on board for the film festival that begins on April 9th. Central Standard returns with host Gina Kaufman, yay, on Monday with a look at how the Affordable Care Act has impacted artists. Stick around for Up to Date and a conversation about tinkering and invention. Our show today was produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Christine Garten. Our announcer is Linda Scher. I'm Russ Simmons. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Enjoy your day.